Thank you for listening to We Have Ways of Making You Talk. Sign up to our Patreon to receive bonus content, live streams, and our weekly newsletter with money off books and museum visits as well, plus early access to all live show tickets. That's patreon.com/wehaveways.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Alarm, alarm! Welcome to We Have Ways of Making You Talk. We're Convoy HX231. What we've tried to do here, Jim, is we've tried to, you know, do some long form thing that is contained within three episodes. And this is the third episode. So this is the one where
we gotta get through it.
We've got to get through it. Like, not unlike the convoy
we've
itself.
We've got to get to Liverpool.
God. And the thing is, dear listener, that we've just been catching up before we started on this, and we've both been reading tons of stuff that we want to talk about, but we have a convoy to get across the Atlantic, don't we?
We have. So we're just gonna have to put all other thoughts and stuff and where we'd left it was the escort, B7 escort group, had joined them under Peter Tretton. Yep. And incidentally, my great mate Rob Gallimore, he said, Gretton's son and grandson want to get in touch. Do you want to hear from them? Of course, 100%.
Why not? Sounds brilliant.
So waiting on that one. But so they got there, and it was the afternoon of the 4th of April.
That's right.
And things were picking up. They were starting to pick up signals on Hufduff, high frequency direction finding, to suggest that the U-boats were massing. And they were in for a long night.
Löwenherz.
Löwenherz, which is the group, the name of the group of 20 U-boats.
Yeah. So they know that, so what the key to all this is, and Gretton talks about this at great length, is the air cover. He thinks as long as the air cover can show up during the day, we'll be absolutely fine.
Yes.
And this predates the invention of the Lee light, or rather the rolling out of the Lee light, which is a lamp by which submarines can be located by radar and then located visually and then attacked at night, which basically closes the air gap, or closes the night-day air gap completely.
Yes.
But that hasn't happened yet. So that means
it's
imminent. As long as there's air cover during the day, they'll be all right. Is his basic thinking, or it'll be that much easier. But it's night. It's night where if you know there's a pack of U-boats coming, where you could be really, really in for it. So the afternoon.
And don't forget they've got six escorts rather than eight. He's in a frigate rather than a destroyer, because his destroyer is being refitted. So they're sort of two men down, one fast destroyer. So they've only got one fast destroyer. It's even not that fast. It's only 26 knots rather than 36 knots. They've got four corvettes, which are these sort of very small tin cans that are not that fast, 20 knots, something like that. And they've got this one corvette. For the moment, that's it. And at 09:25 on the 4th of April, U-530 by Captain Lieutenant Langer, he sights the convoy. He is the fifth boat in from the northern end of the patrol line. And for those who have listened to the previous two, you may remember that there's a 280-mile long line of 20 U-boats lining up to kind of intercept the convoy. They know it's coming, but they don't know quite where it's going to come across the ocean. So that 280 miles sounds like a huge amount, but it's actually perfectly possible that they might get across it. But the convoy has been sighted.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At this point, he reports the position, and the BDU headquarters, which is the Befehlsvabel Harbor or whatever it is. What is it? I always forget that word. Behavel or Shable? I can't remember. Anyway, let's just call it U-Boat Headquarters. What is it?
It's the Befehlshaber der U-Boote. The Befehlshaber der Unterseeboote.
Unterseeboote,
yeah. The Befehlshaber der Unterseeboote.
Anyway, I'm just going to call it U-Boat Headquarters from now on. So spare my blushes.
BDUHQ, darn it, basically.
BDUHQ, exactly. Anyway, so BDUHQ, U-Boat Headquarters, immediately broadcast the position to the other 19.
Yep.
And U-530 is then told to take on the role of the contact keeper. So the point of that is that what you've then got to do is you've just got to then shadow that convoy and make sure you don't lose it out of your sights, and you mustn't attack until everyone else is ready.
Yep.
But basically, they've logged the convoy, they know where it is, they know where it's coming,
yep,
and they're all gearing up for interception once darkness comes. And immediately after that, six U-boats are that's right, there's only 14 at that point. So six are ordered to join Löwenherz.
One's been attacked, hasn't it? U-169 has been
sunk from a previous convoy, and that's gone home. So there's 20 in all.
And then later on that afternoon, a second long signal is sent to the Wolfpack from the BDU to tell them to attack at night, focus on night attacks. So just as Gretton's assessment is that day is too difficult because of the air cover, the Germans know this. They know this perfectly well, and the implication there is, of course, that they are running out of time, and they know they are. That they're running out of time, they're running out of opportunities, and you know it might be obvious to the British that that's the case, but the Germans know it perfectly well, because although they've had a good 2 or 3 months, time is running out. It's the truth. Yeah.
And their losses have not been inconsiderable. They've lost 45 since between December and March.
You see them totted up like that. You know, 19 in February.
Yeah.
Short month.
15 in March.
That's not brilliant, is it? And that's chewing through your officers who one end of the U-boat from another. That's the thing. And
terrible rate. If you think you've got about 300 U-boats in total, but because you're working in thirds, 45 is half your force that you could ever have deployed at one time.
Yeah, yeah. These are Mark 7. So although when you tell me something weighs 500 tons, I know roughly how far 220 feet is. 500 tons, yeah, whatever. I mean, I don't know.
220 feet, that's about 75 metres, isn't it?
What we don't have here is this information in London buses.
Or Eddie Stobart trucks.
Eddie Stobart trucks or Nelson's columns. I mean...
Well, it probably is about Nelson's column, isn't it?
I'm just looking it up.
I reckon Nelson's column is about 200
feet. Nelson's column is 169 feet. So it's one and a third Nelson's. Yeah, one and a third Nelson's column. One and a half Nelson's columns.
I wonder how much that is in Eddie Stobart trucks. It's got to be at least six, hasn't it?
Well, let's see what it is in London buses first.
Standard... Norbert Dentresongle. Norbert Dentresongle.
I love a Norbert Dentresongle.
Yeah, obviously. A friend of mine said to me, once you notice, have you ever noticed Norbert Dentresongle trucks? I went, do you know what? I never have. He goes, you will never, ever miss them again.
Yep.
So right, they're just everywhere.
Right, so
let's get back to it.
A Routemaster bus is 30 feet long. Okay. So this is...
It's about six then, isn't it?
That's a six London
four.
Bus.
Four and a bit of London. Was it four? Four London buses.
Anyway. And they could do 18 knots. Let's not get into how fast that is. But on the surface, they're capable of staying at sea for six to 8 weeks without refueling. Are the Allies? I mean, this is the problem. We're rabbit hole rich. Are the Allies trying to deal with the milk cows in particular? They're just not bothering.
Just not really bothering, to be honest. They're really not bothering. It's very hard in the kind of sort of the heat of the moment to kind of sort of think, okay, that's a milk cow, that's a Mark 7, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's just a U-boat. Yeah. It's a blip on the sonar.
Right.
You know, and obviously the milk cows are not going to go anywhere dangerous. But, again, those 6 to 8 weeks, you need to think of those in thirds as well. So it's kind of 2 weeks of kind of sort of biffing around, patrolling. You know, 2 weeks to get out there, 2 weeks to get back. I mean, it's a hell of a long way, you know, and you're not going that fast.
Yeah. And you're having to be vigilant. vigilant, so you may have to
all that, know, yeah,
and all that. You've got to be super careful.
So, anyway. So what you get on this sort of on the day of the fourth, you get this sort of mounting sense of, you know, if you're Gretton and you're the escorts and indeed the convoy, this feeling that danger is lurking, and it must have been, you know, because you're picking up loads and loads of huff-duff notices, signals, and so. That can only be sent by a U-boat, so you know what that is, and that, you know, that means they're out there. So, you know, it's pretty sinister, and pretty, you know, tension is rising amongst the crews. Videte, which is the destroyer, the one destroyer, so that's faster, can do this 26 knots. So he's sent off to that ship is sent out to sweep and investigate, and it is Gretton, the escort group commander, who's sending out that order. Actually, he does force U-530 to dive, although Videte doesn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, Videte has done his job. And just to reiterate from last week, of course, it's good to from an ally point of view to destroy a U-boat, but actually that's not your number one prime aim. Your number one prime aim is to keep the convoy safe. Screwing up the U-boat's attack plans and making them dive so that they're operating at kind of walking pace, that's the
plenty.
Most important thing.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
And it's, I mean, the way, and the thing to bear in mind is where we've got this from is Peter Gretton's book. He looked at the U-boat logs. So he's looking at what Videte did. And then he looks at what the U-boat did. I mean, from the logs that survive, obviously, and says, you know, Videte doesn't realise, but they do dive. So so much of this game of cat and mouse, no one knows what's going on. I find it
just absolutely incredible. And you can just imagine you're Gretton, or imagine you're one of these convoy commanders. Particularly from Gretton's point of view, you've got the lives and the cargoes of 61 vessels. Mm. That are your responsibility to shepherd home to Liverpool. Yep. So 11:48, U-572 reports the sighting of the convoy. At 12 o'clock, midday, U-530 reports being forced to dive by the escort, and that's Videte coming over. 12:43, U-563 reports sighting. And, of course, the Tay, which is the frigate, which is the ship on which Gretton is aboard, that is the one that's got the Huff-Duff kit, the high-frequency direction-finding kit. They're picking up all these signals. So you can just imagine the tension between the two because, you know, you've got 12 minutes between the first and the second one, then 43 minutes, then you've got at 14:19, so 2:19 p.m., U-572 reports diving to avoid another escort. So the escort sweeps and zigzags of the convoy, and this idea is that you move the whole convoy one direction, and then you turn it at kind of 45 degrees or whatever to a different direction. Then a further at 14:51, 2:51 p.m., a really strong signal is picked up by Tay.
Yeah.
Received on a bearing of 238 degrees. So this is on the port quarter of HMS Videte, the destroyer. Yeah. And amazingly, at 15:07, U-572, which has been stalking the convoy, is rammed by one of the freighters.
Yeah, it's amazing, this, isn't it?
And this is a really, really unlucky submarine.
Yeah,
because in the Mediterranean, the captain's been reported for cowardice by one of his officers for not pressing home orders to sort of get into the Mediterranean past Gibraltar. And Capitaine Lieutenant Heinz Hersacker is found guilty and then commits suicide before he's going to be shot. Captain's Oberleutnant Heinz Kummertat, who is really inexperienced. I mean, you can tell that by the fact that he gets rammed by one of
his freighter.
If you're going to get yourself so close by a freighter that you're going to be rammed on it, at least put a ripping torpedo into it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not doing that. The weird thing is that the freighter that hits it doesn't, not a single freighter reports hitting anything.
Well, again,
so it must be very light.
But this is interesting, isn't it? Because again, it comes back to this thing. No one knows what's going on. That there's these fragments of information. It's like driving in the fog, isn't it? Basically, where you don't see the other guy's tail lights until you go up his ass, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's worse than that because you know the information you're getting is so fragmentary, quite a lot of it. I mean, that's the interesting thing, is that, yep. you know, these signals increase in intensity and get nearer. So you know they're coming.
Yes. They're absolutely coming. They're like, and it's, yeah. it's one always is afraid of, well, you're afraid of all sorts of things, but one is particularly afraid of the unknown. It's what you yeah. don't know. You don't know what's out there. You don't know when it's yeah. going to come. Again, it's that whole kind of sort of, it's that sort of going around a house on a movie, isn't it? Where the sort of person's going through and you know, all the lights are being switched off and you're just waiting for someone to pounce out from behind the cupboard. Yeah. It's that kind of thing all the time. You know, you just, you know, nerves just must be so taut. You must be on so yeah. on edge. At 15:41, so at 3:41 p.m., Videt, the destroyer, reports spotting a conning tower. So yeah. suddenly you kind of, you know, you've seen physical evidence. There's this one little tube just sort of sliding yeah. through the water.
Yeah.
And Gresson says, all concerned now knew that the radio signals had been confirmed by a physical sighting, that the crunch had come and that the convoy was in for a big battle.
I mean,
you're just braced, aren't you?
Yeah, but then what does he do? He continues on the same course so as to not alert the U-boat to knowing that the U-boat's there.
So again, it's all cat and mouse, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's so much of that.
But you'd only do that,
that
if you were experienced, wouldn't you?
I mean, that's one of these kind of judgment calls where you think, well, okay, if that's what he's going with, because the other way to scare the U-boat off, which is what we were just talking about, is to steer at him, you know? So it's making that decision, picking that
yes.
That distinction, I think, is really, you know, that's the mark of those are the decisions the captain has to make, because as it turns out, is that the right thing to have done? I can't judge it, is the thing. But that's the decision he's made. It's fascinating. And then,
but
so
again,
then,
it's sort of, you know, the battle is building up. This is the kind yeah. of sort of, you yeah. know, the massing of the U-boats, the kind of yeah. stalking. I mean, they're being stalked. You know, the convoy yeah. is being stalked by the U-boats. So at 16:17, Alisma, which is one of the corvettes, sent on a bearing, is sent off by Gresson on a bearing of 350 degrees and sights a U-boat, which immediately dives. This is probably yep. the U-563. Just a little while later, less than a quarter of an hour later at 16:30, Videt gets arranged by radar for the first time. Now, you remember that for those who are listening to Lava 2, you can get a radar reading from sort of, you know, 8,400 yards, something like that. So at 6,000 yards on a bearing of 190 degrees. So Videt beetles off again at 22 knots, which is the best speed they can do in the current weather and the current conditions. Yep. 16:37, so seven minutes later. On a bearing of 142 degrees at 5,800 yards. So Videt steers to that U-boat's diving position. Yep. Because it's dived, it can't be going very fast.
Well, and
so
then,
you can get there. Okay, you know, you can go do that in quite quick area, quite quick.
But then
time.
Videt has to slow down so the Asdic will work. There's this sort of thing where it goes into slow motion a little. They can't find a U-boat. They drop 5 depth charges anyway on its estimated position. Nothing. 17:18, Asdic does pick up an echo 1,500 yards yep. away. They drop depth charges again. It's the Asdic toad.
Yeah, it is. And so what's interesting about this is it's quite a lot of sort of escorts going to an estimated position and just chucking over a whole load of depth charts anyway on the off chance. So 14 yep. depth charts dropped, set to depths of between 150 and 300 feet. So you can set your depth charts at different levels.
Yeah,
and actually, U-594 at that time reports having been accurately depth charged, so not far off. Amazingly,
yeah.
damage to electrical gear, valve in hull fractured, and water flowing in. I mean, can you imagine? You're on the U-boat, and the water's coming in. Hunter turned to hunted.
Well, I mean, and that, of course, that's time that where they're repairing and all that's time that they can't engage the convoy. So even though they haven't sunk it. They've held it up. They've slowed it down. There's a spanner in the works for them. Then at 5:30, 17:30, more Asdic, Hedgehog misses.
Yeah.
I mean, Videt is then ordered to rejoin the convoy. So Videt's been sort of having a... That's
quite
actually
a
pretty... That's pretty fruitful, isn't it? Because it also shows the kit works. You can locate U-boats. You know, and their systems are in place. That will work for them. And then I guess while this is happening, you haven't got time to think about being cold or wet or any of that stuff. So at 18:17, Tay's lookout. And I mean, this is interesting that they're seeing these U-boats on the horizon. The lookouts are doing an amazing job, aren't they, with optics.
Yeah, yeah.
They go after it. It's U-229, but it's gone again. This is coming up for nightfall. Gretton is not happy, is he? Might not be.
There's three different U-boats have been sighted. And he knows that others are around.
And that can only mean that there are more coming as well, because Löwenherz is that's only a fifth of his strength, isn't it?
The picture was one of the perfect prologues of a classic pack attack on a large scale. The convoy had passed through the patrol line. 14 submarines were in reach and 6 others had been ordered to join. The deliberate assembly of the pack had taken place in excellent visibility, unhampered by air cover. Admiral Dönitz must have felt pleased that evening and must have expected great news the next day. Strong northwesterly winds.
Night falls. Gretton orders the convoy's course to 45 degrees to port. So again, he's altering the course to create confusion, basically, for the enemy. Although, as we talked about, I think, in the first week, you know, a great big convoy of different ships that can go at different speeds and all that sort of thing and speak different languages and maybe have different ideas about how they want to conduct themselves, that's quite tricky in itself, isn't it?
Yep.
And then you have your retired rear admiral on the convoy's flagship.
Yep.
Who's the convoy commodore, who then hoists a flag, submarines in the vicinity. God.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got this northwesterly winds. It's a bit of a swell. It's getting dark. I mean, you know, manoeuvring the whole convoy is really tricky. But actually, Gretton says the station keeping of the ships is above average, and the sort of keeping formation is pretty good. And one of the problems when you've got bad weather is it's really hard to spot the U-boats because, you know, shadows of waves can be used and can confuse with conning towers and, you know, brown flecks of wake, you know, can easily be assumed to be a subs and it's not.
Yeah.
And weirdly, the Aurora Borealis is in the sky as well.
Yeah.
So I mean, at times the sky is very bright, which means it's brighter, which means the convoy feels very naked. You know, it's not light enough that you can see a U-boat very easily, but the U-boat can absolutely see you silhouetted against the skyline.
How spooky that is as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Gretton's consideration is that the enemy will attack downwind and sea. So you adjust your defences accordingly regarding what the wind's doing. So the starboard flank's weak. So Pink's the only escort on the starboard side. Ahead said you have Elisma, loose strife on the port bow. HMS Snowflake, my favourite ship in the Royal Navy, on the port beam. And Vedette is still 4 miles away. And the escorts are at 5,000 yards and the convoy's moving at 8 knots. I mean, I think that so he's basically hedging his bets that the attack's coming downwind and that they're gonna have to carry on the game of cat and mouse, but the U-boats have this advantage, you say, of the lighting, in fact.
So 5,000 yards, what's that, about two-thirds of a mile?
I can't give you that in London buses, I'm afraid.
Or Nelson's Column. But, you know, the point is, of course, also is that, you know, it's been a pretty hard work. Everyone's already knackered. You know, and you've got the problem of just, you know, this just the whole thing about being in a corvette where you're constantly just sort of, you know, God, your sea legs must, how you getting used to that?
You probably never do you?
Yeah. Actually, Gretton says a good line here. He goes, on the bridge, at the guns, and on the quarter deck aft, where depth charge crews waited for action, the men were faceless ghouls, wrapped in duffel coats, the hoods drawn over their heads, and sometimes with sou'westers added to give extra protection. As the spray came sweeping, rattling over them, each man ducked, then waited calmly until the arrival of the next wave's onslaught. Oh.
Yeah.
I tell you, Rachel would hate it. She doesn't like the cold.
Right. So, I mean, before the attack begins, there's this initial moment of drama, isn't there, where one of the ships drops a flare overboard and no one...
That's right, yes.
And no one can ascertain who, how, or why. The escort races to try and put it out. The light could be seen for miles. And in Gretton's account, I mean, he writes it very well. He says, you know, I'm absolutely livid about this. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, you know, the enemy see that. U-boat logs don't mention it. They never see it. Or if they do see it, it's not regarded as anything worth bothering with.
No, it's amazing, isn't it?
Which is amazing. Because you think, oh, my God, you know, that can't help. That's clearly like a major problem for them, and it isn't. Very strange. Anyway, at 21:30, U-630 starts to approach to attack the convoy. This is Oberleutnant Werner Winkler. I mean, come on.
So that is a first lieutenant.
And that's a central casting name as well for a U-boat captain, isn't it? Werner Winkler. In he goes, basically, and fires at least two torpedoes. 40 minutes later, roughly, Gret's on the bridge, sees a white flash over the convoy's starboard side, but no explosion heard, no signal received. Normally, people send up two white rockets to say their ship's been hit, but there's nothing. Winkler reports a hit. So even when a ship has been successfully struck and hit, no one's sure. I mean, this is the thing. When you sent me this book and sat down to read it, I just found all of that because, you know, in a U-boat, if you watch Das Boot, everyone knows what's going on all the time, and everything. You know, the information is like in clear sequence. It's, you know, and they make in a drama like Das Boot, they make the point that, you know, it takes a while and you have to bide your time and all that. But what's not clear is this thing that a ship gets sunk and no one realizes. I mean, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing, isn't it? And again, you just get such a clear sense from the Gretton book that there is so much confusion, which is why your commanders need to be so on it, because they're constantly having to make best judgment calls.
Yeah.
Best judgment calls only come from imperturbability and experience. There's no alternative, is there?
And then there is the Shillong is the ship that's been hit. They realise that it has. They didn't fire. The ship next to it, third in the next column to Shillong, the Stephen Foster, doesn't report it. Didn't fire flares and doesn't report it. And Gretton says it was mistakes like this which make the escort's tasks even more difficult. I mean, that's one way of putting it, isn't it?
You can see
him shaking his fist at that one. And
so it's 10:15. Gretton's going, "What the heck's going on here, lads?"
Yeah.
And so Pink and Elisma report two white rockets have just been fired, and the Commodore reports that the lead ship in the 12th column, number 121, the Shillong, has been torpedoed.
Yeah.
And you know, Gretton's understandably annoyed. You know, why is it being delayed? Because, you know, that allows the U-boat time to sort of get out of that situation.
Yeah.
And then Gretton orders what I think is just the best code name ever. A half raspberry.
I say, chaps, I think it's time for the half raspberry.
Half raspberry. Very well.
And that's everyone to fire snowflake rockets to loop. So basically to light the whole place up.
Yeah, so you've not wanted to light yourself up, and now suddenly you want yourself to be very lit up. You want to hide yourself before they attack, but once they've attacked, you want to see it so that you can pick them up, you know, on the surface. Yeah. So again, this is all about making them dive.
Yeah, and he regrets this. He wishes he'd done it the minute he saw the initial flash rather than waiting for people to tell him what maybe had happened. Yeah. But you can see that's pretty sound, isn't it? You're turning night to day. You're doing what you can to rule out the U-boat advantage at night. We've done pretty well there. We've got through most of April the 4th. We need to take a quick break. Yes, let's. We've set the scene. Let's crack on. We'll see you in a minute.
I'm Anthony Scaramucci, former White House Director of Communications and Wall Street financier.
And I'm Katty Kay, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC Studios. I've been covering American politics for almost three decades.
Welcome to The Rest is Politics U.S., brought to you by Goalhanger.
Go on, tell us, were those donations you made, like Obama in 2008, was that idealism? Were you hoping to get something out of these campaigns that would serve your own business interests, for example?
So I think this will either make this podcast incredibly successful, Katty, or people will be horrified and they'll shut it off right now, because I'm going to be very real with you. The Obama donation, I had gone to law school with President Obama. We were not classmates. I was a few years ahead of him. It was 2007. He was then Senator Obama. I had a check in my breast pocket. I went over to the senator. I said, "Senator, I said, you and I didn't really know each other in law school, but I'm about to hand you a big check. Can I lie to my friends and tell them that you and I knew each other in law school?" Well, Obama looks at me, had the best smile in American politics since Jack Kennedy.
Forever.
Yeah. He lights up. He looks at me and says, "I'll tell you what, if you double the amount of the check, we'll take it back to Hawaii." Okay. And I looked at him. I said, "You're done." I had another check in my pocket. I ripped it up. I doubled the amount of the check. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've been to more White House Christmas parties during the Obama administration than the Trump administration.
In this pivotal year for the United States, democracy, and world affairs, Britain's biggest podcast, The Rest is Politics, is launching Stateside.
Uncovering secrets from inside the Biden and Trump inner circles and how they shape the world's most important economy, but also the global economy too.
New episodes are released every Friday morning.
Just search The Rest is Politics US wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to We Have Ways of Making You Talk, where James and I have done our, well, I mean, you know, that's not bad, though. We've done it with one day. So the Shillong is going to the bottom. They've half raspberried to light up the convoy. Yep. So tension is super, super high.
Fidette's been sent off, and the awful thing for Tay is that it has that cruel sea moment where they have to go past all the men screaming and shouting and asking to be picked up.
Tay has to basically go through the survivors. And it's not until a lot later that Pink is able to try. But three freighters at this point, because U-boats have been sighted.
Oh, yeah, no, hold on. There's a great line from Gretton on this.
Yeah.
The heart had to be hardened and the bitter, logical rather than emotional decisions taken. Yet this did very little to relieve the later memories of the scene.
Yeah, but I mean, that's his job, isn't it? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and it's literally the needs of the many outweighing the needs of the few. I mean, in the bitterest way imaginable. At this point, three freighters decide to leave the convoy.
I mean, a bit of panic coming on.
I mean, you know,
more stupid.
Well, then that's the, you know, they have a war conference basically that they all get, you know, they get together, and clearly what happens is they got some of the crew got to the bridge and say, "No, we're getting out of here, boss. Sorry." The captain says, no, I've had enough of this. And that's kind of, you know, given what's happened in the preceding months, maybe you can see why they might think that's the best thing, but it ain't. I mean, I suppose it's three less ships for Gretton to worry about, but it's three ships that are more than likely to be going to the bottom. So then they reconfigure the escort. There's another ship torpedoed at 2307, the Warunga. They try and hang on. Oberleutnant Heinz Eckermann of 365 reports hitting it. Or reports a hit to U-260, U-563, put off attacking by the half raspberry, and because the escorts are tooling about looking for them, so it's working. It's the point that the half raspberry works. Then into the morning, early morning, 01:27, the 5th of April, Snowflake, easily my favourite ship, Royal Navy, spots a U-boat, probably 572, makes a run, loses contact to 300 yards. I mean, that's how close this is all getting.
Yes, really, really.
Yeah, dropping depth charges, regaining contact, 9 depth charges dropped, low rumbling sound heard after the 7th. Charges set to detonate between 150 and 300 feet. And the U-boat, is 572, is lying off at 360 feet.
So they're too high.
Yeah.
But how do you judge that? I mean,
you're off your ping and you're doing your best, aren't you?
You're doing your best. So Snowflake is now 8 miles astern of the convoy after doing all that kind of querying around.
Drama, yeah, exactly.
So then has to kind of head back at full speed. Meanwhile, Huffduff is picking up all sorts of signals, Huffduff on HMS Tay.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely clear that a number of U-boats are now within reach of the convoy.
Yeah.
And also the picture they get is that at least one U-boat is ahead of the convoy. This is probably U-168.
And there's Elizabeth
picks up a radar contact, but that actually turns out to be Aruba trying to break away, one of the three that's trying to bugger off.
Persuade her to rejoin. I mean, that in itself, that you're picking up radar contacts that aren't U-boats, so that's time wasted. So everything, it's this endless sort of endless grinding calculus of what's going on. So then Elizabeth picks up another radar signal 2,000 yards ahead at 0228, loses radar contact at 1,000 yards, drops depth charges, another radar contact shortly after that, more star shells, and they see a conning tower. They lose radar contact, but then get ASDIC contact. I mean, you could just imagine the information coming to the captain. You can feel it, can't you? Sorry, sir, we've lost radar contact. And that's you 5-6-4.
The disappointment of losing contact, the relief at gaining it again, the kind of excitement of gaining it again, the kind of the hunt is back on.
Yeah. And this is you 5-6-4. Hans Fiedler, Oberleutnant Hans Fiedler, who remains on the surface until Elisma's second attack. He has to go back to Lorient because his periscope's damaged and his number 3 tank's torn open. So that's one. I mean,
what's he doing staying on the surface? Again, you know, he's an Oberleutnant. He's a first lieutenant. Okay, then this is not a
he doesn't know what he's doing.
He's not a corvette capitaine. He's not a... No. It's indicative that you're getting a depleting U-boat commander crop.
And so that's one less U-boat to worry about. Though, of course, they don't know this in the conference. They don't know that he's had to return to Lorient. All the unknown unknowns in this, Donald Rumsfeld, that there's a ton of them, isn't there? The amount you don't know completely outweighs what you think you might know. At 3 o'clock in the morning, Pink says she's unable to find survivors from the Shillong.
The whole lot are gone.
They've all gone. Pink's ordered to rejoin. As an American tanker, the Sun Oil has an engine problem, has dropped out of the convoy.
I mean, that is just your worst nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, just imagine the panic for the engine artificers and the mechanics down in the hole. You know, because if you get hit, you're not surviving that.
And so the three ships to have left are the US Thomas Sumter, the Dutch Blitar, and the Swedish Valaren. And they've all gone their own way. Dawn comes at 5 o'clock.
Interesting that
morning.
None of them are British, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yes. Like foreigners, James, of course, just can't be relied on, blah, blah, blah. You know, there'll be a bit of that kind of chat. That's the thing about Johnny Holland.
Yeah, but also from them, there'll be a bit going on, you know, I don't trust these bloody limeys.
Of course. Brits, they're going to get us all killed. Let's get out of here. So they muster the convoy between 5 and 6 in the morning. The Commodore has to be this sort of admin to do. Commodore needs updating. Yep. And that literally consists of the Tay going alongside and shouting stuff.
And yelling through a megaphone. Yeah, so it's a bit different when you haven't got mobiles.
Exactly. They ask for a tug for Warunga.
Which has been hit at the front. The front part of it has been hit, but it's still sort of going on because the...
But I think we call it the bow, James. We're being nautical, aren't we?
The bow,
call it the bow. Yes. Yeah. Struck in the bow.
Stern, because aft, they're still absolutely fine.
Yeah, that's right.
Covering slightly on that one.
Quick with the lingo.
Yeah.
And then they're told...
Razor sharp on this now.
And then they're told to alter course to make the support group's arrival quicker and easier. So, I mean, the idea that you're zigzagging 60 ships... And keeping tabs on anyone. I mean, no wonder there's a radar contact that they think's U-boat that's a tanker. And then Sun Oil is reporting it's being attacked. 1110 U-168 reports diving because an escort has arrived, which is probably Videt. Snowflake takes up Videt's position while Videt's away. I mean, they're herring about all over the ocean.
And so there's an air plan that day as well. So one Liberator from 86 Squadron. Yeah, that's all it needs. It just needs one to just circle around.
Yeah.
Should arrive just after daylight. Two more Liberators to follow from Iceland. Plus 5 Catalinas of the US Navy from Iceland due to fly parallel track. In fact, as it turns out, only one Catalina manages to fulfill the patrol. The other 4 have to return to due to bad weather. I mean, they are smaller aircraft and Liberators, to be fair. But the first Liberator, letter X from 86 Squadron, also has to return home because of bad weather. It doesn't reach the convoy, so that's not good news. 0952 U-706 Corvette Captain Alexander Zitzewitz.
Zitzewitz.
Makes contact with the convoy.
It starts again.
He's obviously quite experienced, this guy.
And Snowflake's astern, Loose Drive's on the port bow, Tay is ahead of the Commodore's column, Elisma's on the starboard bow, Pink's on the starboard beam. At 10 o'clock, Liberator P from Iceland starts its homing procedures and doesn't get to them. So, I mean, the air cover's fine if it shows up. The worry here, isn't it?
And not until 11:45 does a Liberator N of 120 Squadron operating from Iceland finally spot the convoy. This is Flying Officer Mavely, and he sights a U-boat 10 miles on the port beam of convoy. And I guess, you know, at kind of sort of fairly low height, you know, it's quite easy to see the wake of a U-boat on the surface, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. I imagine so, yeah. Well, he's at 1,000 feet below the cloud base.
Visibility good.
And he sees U-584 under Captain Lieutenant Dacre steering a parallel course to the convoy. So he attacks him while he's still on the surface. I mean, it's interesting that they don't... seem to see it.
I guess it's coming from behind. I don't know.
Yeah. Six. Yeah, but surely they're all up in the running tail like this, aren't they, Jim?
You'd have thought so, wouldn't you? You'd have thought so.
I mean, I'm miming binoculars right now, everybody. So they drop six depth charges 100 feet apart from a height of just 50 feet. And two of them land really close. The daring, that's a big aeroplane. That's a big, heavy plane. And they're doing that with it. I mean, these, you know, flying Officer Matherly's a gutsy fellow, isn't he? And his crew are gutsy to do that. U boat dives. They drop marker flares. They don't see it again. Captain Lieutenant, he notes that the depth charges were close, but there's no damage. U584 thinks, well, that's enough of that. It breaks off from the convoy. So it's worked. Again, it comes back to that thing. And then U260, who's the contact keeper, who's the sort of watch picket, he dives as well because he's seen an escort.
And then Gretton hears about the attack on the U-boat by aircraft N of 120 Squadron, and so orders Tay to join the hunt as well.
Yep.
And again, you're constantly weighing up, you know, do I get involved with that on my boat when you've got a Liberator there, or, you know, or should we stay with the convoy? I mean, these are the kind of the choices, again, that you have to kind of constantly have to make.
And then U706 reports an escort overhead, which must have been the Tay. So everyone's, I mean, they're all cheek by jowl with each other, aren't they? That's the thing. Yeah. You're looking for one U-boat and you're right on top of another, is the other thing that's going on here. And of course, you don't know you're looking for U706 or U584, do you? You're just looking for U-boats.
Yeah, so there's quite a big hit at 12:15 because U706 manages to get close enough to the British Arda, which is ship number 62, which is the second ship in the sixth column. It's a huge explosion, massive sheet of flame. Bridge catches fire because oil is sprayed everywhere. It's an absolute horror story. Engine stopped. Crew prepare to abandon ship. The weird thing is there's a second torpedo which only narrowly misses Tyndareus and Port Sydney. Tyndareus, of course, being the Commodore's
convoy, vessel. Commodore's.
So Gretton orders a new order, which is almost as good as half raspberry, but not quite.
Artichoke. Artichoke. Okay, chaps. Time for artichoke.
And this is the prearranged plan to be carried out if a ship's hit by day. Taypos is right over U706.
Yeah.
But the conditions are such it just doesn't pick it up on Asdic. And that is
the Asdic.
That's the problem.
None of it's perfect. Then Liberator P sights the convoy, and a Catalina at the same time sights a U-boat to the west of the convoy and makes two attacks, which is probably...
So hang on, at this stage, four ships have been hit.
Yeah, I know.
So it's the Warunga, the Shillong, British Arda, and Sunoil. Sunoil's a straggler, but only three within the convoy have been hit.
If you're thinking, well, we're in for two or three days of this, that might feel like a bad start if you're Gretton. I mean, what we're realizing is that the U-boats are gradually one by one being deterred or sort of delayed or damaged or attrited. So U-592 is attacked by a Catalina. The Captain Lieutenant Carl Baum reports a leaking fuel tank. They get this repaired, but again, he's been held up.
Yep.
Snowflake heads over to British Arda to try and persuade the crew to stay aboard and put the fire out. But the tanker looks like it's not going to sink. Honestly, I mean, just think of what that's
dead,
like.
Engines are shopped. Engines have stopped.
And it's full of you know,
oil.
The most combustible fuel you could possibly get. I mean, it's just horrendous. You think of
how are you feeling about staying on that boat?
I'll admit it, I'm not mad about it.
No. So by 1:30 in the afternoon of the 5th of April, there's only four escorts on station.
Yeah.
Because Snowflake and Vedette are off doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
You've got two Liberators shadowing the convoy. At 2 o'clock, U-594 is attacked by four depth charts from Liberator P from 120 Squadron from Iceland.
At 21...
And then it all goes a bit quiet.
Yes,
it's not till 21 minutes past five that evening that the next U-boat signal's picked up.
Because they've
of the air cover.
Because of the air cover. So they've had 4 hours of radio silence because of the air cover. So, that's interesting that they're not even saying we're being attacked by aircraft. The best thing to do is simply shut up. Shillong's gone. There's no trace of Sonol.
Sonol's gone.
Vedette's looking in the wrong place. And Valaren, there's no word from Valaren.
Which is one of those ones that's buggered off.
Which is the Swedish boat that made its exit. So clearly it's not going well. And Gretton says that there's a nice lull where that everyone gets a chance to get something to eat, have a rest, have a moment off the mental strain and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
At this point.
Like a cocoa.
Yeah. And it, cocoa, sir. Thanks very much.
Very well.
They will. But nevertheless,
they're always bringing sandwiches, aren't they? On a tray, a sandwich and a mug of cocoa.
Jim, I think I'm gonna make a decision here. Right,
we haven't finished. We're
have not. We? No, we're not gonna get through.
Okay, I knew it was gonna be four parts.
Yeah. But basically, as the 5th of April ends, we're going to the evening of the morning of the 6th. There's 20 U-boats still around, as far as Gretton knows. They're not all in contact with the convoy, but as far as he knows, there's 20 U-boats out there. 1856, U-191 sights the convoy, so there's another one coming to the party. At 1945, U-270 is ahead of the convoy and reports the sighting. The BDU are still very, very confident of success that night, and that in fact they've not got off to a bad start, have they?
It's not a bad start. It's not a kind of disaster for the convoy. It's not brilliant for the U-boats, but it's not bad.
Yeah, and you know, an oil tanker that's a key target, isn't it? Fuel is everything in this war. So there's a moderate wind blowing. All escorts are at station, and all ASDIC and radar's working. So their escorts are in good shape for what the night might bring. Elizabeth's on the starboard bow. Pink's on the starboard beam. We all know the difference between bow and beam, don't we, everybody? Tay's on the starboard quarter. Loose drive's on the port bow. Vedette's on the port beam. Snowflake is on the port quarter. I don't want to go on the port quarter. Snowflake's on the port quarter. Going to the port quarter affects my human rights. Gretton is hoping for early warning of any... the port quarter's not a safe space. Gretton is hoping for an early warning of any U-boat attacks from the Hafduff. Reminded, all escorts are told, fire a star shell as soon as the radar contacts make, because that's what's gone wrong the night before.
So let's get a bit sharper on it, chaps.
And there's no time for prolonged hunts. Is what Gretton says. The key is to prevent attacks, not destroy U-boats, which brings us, circles us back to the thing he was saying right at the start, that the point is to confound the enemy rather than destroy him necessarily. Any of you can destroy him, that's a Brucey bonus, but what you're after is confounding him, delaying him, preventing his attacks. So should we go up to midnight, Jim? Let's go up to midnight, see if we can do it.
Well, the alternative is that we do half of it next week. For the first half and finish it off.
Yeah. Yeah. Why? Let's do that because we're at 50 minutes now.
We can do time another 10, can't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So at 2000 hours, the convoy has almost completed its turn to port steering at 070 degrees. And of course, the Hafduff starts up again. So there's been this radio silence from the Germans because of the air cover, and up comes the Hafduff.
And then this extraordinary thing happens.
Oh, because this is incredible.
Which is U-594 surfaces by mistake in the middle of the convoy and can see at least six freighters. Captain Lieutenant Friedrich Mumm, your mum, considered himself too close to ships to fire. I mean, this is just amazing because in the old days, I mean, you wouldn't get Kunter Preen worrying about that. You wouldn't get Wanks worrying about that.
No, he'd crack on with sinking things.
He'd crack on with sinking things, exactly. Or Shepka or Kretschmer or any of these guys. Yeah. I mean, they'd have absolutely just sunk
their
three ships in no time and got out of it. But he doesn't. He orders his U-boat to steam at full speed on the same course as a convoy, still on the surface, trying to get ahead and then turn and fire. But, I mean, it's just absolutely bonkers. So that's between 12th and 13th Collins. And that is I'm sorry, but that's an incredibly lucky escape for...
For the convoy.
The convoy of ridiculous. Because that could have been carnage.
And no one saw him. It's the other thing. No one spotted him. So no, we know this. We know this from Gretton's examination of the of their ships' logs, those U-boats' logs after the war, which is incredible.
Yep. And Elizabeth picks up the radar echo at 20:25, so a little bit later, 15 minutes later. Elizabeth turns to prepare a counterattack. Radar contact lost at 1,000 yards as the U-boat finally dives. And then ASDIC is gained at 450 yards. So you're right on it. I mean, 450 yards is nothing. 10 depth charges dropped. Lieutenant Kander rows, then heads back to the station.
Half an hour later, Elizabeth picks up another contact.
Yeah,
2,000 yards. They fire a star shell. So they're sharper on their drills this time. At 2058, they see a conning tower. Yeah. The U-boat dives, but there's no ASDIC ping. I mean, that's the other thing that why not? Well, because it doesn't always see.
It just doesn't always work, and there's a shoal of fish, or I don't know, whatever. Yeah. It just doesn't. Or it's been
so they drop 10 depth charges on the estimated U-boat position. There's no damage to U-594, but U-594 is that enough? They exit stage left, and they don't carry on against the convoy. The key of preventing attacks, not destroying U-boats, that's been achieved already within an hour and a half of that, or within an hour and 5 minutes, 6 minutes of that order going out. You know,
so much quicker.
At 21:20, Looseleaf fires a star shell after seeing a suspected contact. Doesn't report a radar contact from earlier. I mean, he doesn't rate Looseleaf's captain, does he? Is the thing.
Not at all. That's really clear.
They're en route and they release depth charges by error.
Nice chap,
low.
Not much of a commander.
Yeah, exactly.
And they Monty's famous lines.
And they drop these depth charges that damage their ASDIC and their radar because they set them wrong.
Yep.
So quite clearly thinks he's useless. A conning tower, this is all at 20 past nine, a conning tower spotted by a merchant ship 1,000 yards away, and the merchant ship decides to try to ram the U-boat. I mean, you know, everyone's having
Good
a go.
Him.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Good on him.
And Looseleaf is inside the convoy. And of course,
which is a terrible situation. I mean, that's just crap.
Because
you don't want to be doing that.
You could be colliding with anybody and everybody.
Oh, yeah. Absolute nightmare.
They get their ASDIC and radar working again. And at 21:25, I mean, this is all within an hour of Alisma picking up a contact. This is all within an hour and 10 minutes of U-594 surfacing within the
convoy.
I mean,
this is frantic, furious stuff.
Yeah. Again, picks up activity on the port beam. Vidette, off they go. They drive off the U-boat.
Again?
Yeah.
I mean, Vidette as the only destroyer, so the fastest vessel, really is constantly being sent off willy-nilly, isn't it?
Which is just, just as well she refueled the day before at the start of the day. One of those things. Gretton
but again,
sends
the U-boat's
out
driven off.
Yep. Gretton sends out the signal. There seems to be one still ahead. The rest of the team has retired with headaches.
But a bit comes a bit too soon.
At 21:37... Pink, and try not to think of the singer Pink every time we mention Edgemont. Pink has firm radar contact at 2,400 yards on the starboard bow of the convoy. It's U-270 trying to get into the gap between Elisma and Pink. This is Oberleutnant Paul Friedrich Otto. Yeah, Otto. And he's trying to use Looseleaf star shells. So
I really like jazz, but don't tell my Nazi friends.
Oh no, I understand you're a big fan of Ella Fitzgerald, yeah? Yes, yes.
Of jazz.
Jazz music. And U-270, Paul Friedrich Otto, he fires two torpedoes at two tankers, thinks he's hit one, but hasn't.
I mean, how do you get that wrong?
Well, I know. This is the thing, because after all, I've watched Das Boot. When you hit the ship, you know you have, right?
A huge sheet of flame goes into the night and you see it disappearing on the horizon.
But I suppose what you don't do in real life is hang around watching it on your periscope, because you must have
felt you've heard a distant noise or something.
Enough bang, and so you bugger off, right? And then Pink has an ASDIC contact of 100 yards.
I know.
And then loses it.
Yeah. Drops 10 depth charges at 21:42. U-270 reports minor damage. They never see the U-boat, but they see the phosphorescence of its wake.
Yes, which is something that people often talk about, don't they?
Yeah.
Phosphorescence in the sea.
Yeah. So that's Paul Friedrich Otto retreating with his 78s.
Yes.
away from the convoy. Looseleaf managed to get back on station. Spots a U-boat.
Let's get out of here, then we can listen to some more jazz music.
Puts a needle on the record, Otto.
Let's get out of here.
Elisma then makes another radar contact at 10 to 10, only just back at the station. Again, a U-boat trying to penetrate the screen between Elisma and Pink.
More star shells fired.
More star shells. Elisma loses radar contact, but it's definitely two U-boats.
Yes.
Elisma drops a full pattern of depth charges in the estimated position.
What is a full pattern? It's like 14, isn't it?
I think something like that, yeah. I mean, I'm worried they're going to run out of depth charges.
Yeah, they seem to have a lot, don't they?
Yeah. Vidette's back on the station by 22:25. There's a sort of 50-minute lull. 23:15, Pink gets another contact. More star shells. U-boat driven off.
Convoy starts to alter course again back to 100 degrees at 23:30. This is completed by midnight at 23:55. Huffduff office on Tay getting strong signal on the starboard bow. Yet another one. So at 00:35, Elisma reports sighting a flash in the convoy. And Gretton asks the convoy commodore for anything to report. Absolutely nothing. So again, you know, this is sort of confusing. And at this point, Gretton says, "It's difficult to describe adequately the tension during the night. Complete darkness when it was difficult to see adjacent ships alternated with the bright glow of star shells, which made everyone feel naked to attack. The weather was poor and lookouts had to contend with strong wind and sometimes spray. On the bridges, it was easy to mistake mistakes and coolness of decision had to be matched with speed." I think that's our concluding point, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we will return to get this convoy to Liverpool. I mean, we did make a rash promise that we'd achieve that today, but we haven't.
We've done quite a long way. I'm looking at the level of my notes. We're definitely...
I don't know. We've broken the back of it. But I think that, again, the thing is with this... he's right. It is difficult to describe adequately the tempest of the night. And I think we've made that plain with our narration here. I mean, there's so much going on every ship. Everyone is nerves stressed, stretched, attention stretched. Yep. Every single sort of cog in this machine that has all this kit that works some of the time, that doesn't work some of the time. Everyone's trying to second guess everybody else. It's just, it's absolutely extraordinary.
So really, you want to be third ship in the seventh column, don't you? That's where you want to be.
Yes, I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you think you're just told, or do you think there's a bit of kind of sort of, oh, I think it'd be best if I kind of went in, you know,
ran probably a bit of argy-bargy. Probably a bit of argy-bargy. No, after you,
sinking,
old boy.
Crashing and ramming into each other.
After you, old boy. No, really, it's no problem. Yeah. Anyway, we will return when Convoy HX231 finally does get across the Atlantic to Liverpool in
or
more than one.
Most of them.
Or does it? And a little roundup, which he does very well in the book. We'll look at some of what happens to some of the people who are sunk, what that experience is like, because there's some amazing stories.
God, yeah, that's incredible.
Thanks all for listening. We will return with what's left of the convoy as soon as we can. And on Thursday, we have Ways USA conversation with John McManus. I think about medicine was the last one we had, wasn't it? Anyway, we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening. Cheerio.